me to welcome Jim Dave from the sponsorship group in Chatham, New Jersey.
Well, my name is Jim Bach. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety date is November 19th, 1987. My home group is the sponsorship group. We meet Sunday night in Chatham, New Jersey. It's an awesome meeting. It's an active meeting. It's a meeting where I know that if I bring a new guy or a new girl or somebody new to Alcoholics Anonymous, that they're going to hear a message of hope and recovery. And I think the way we've set up our meeting was through some experience, some bad experiences. And I remember I was pretty new in AA, and the speaking commitment didn't show up, so they asked for volunteers. And I remember three people volunteered, so they split up the meeting, and two of them were drunk, and one of them was brand new. And I'm pretty sure that she went out drinking with the other two speakers after the meeting. But I want to thank Jeff for asking me to speak. And if you don't like what I have to say, you can talk to Jeff. Don't talk to me. I just come because I like the way I talk. I am. My home group is probably a little bit like this group in that we have caused a bit of controversy in our area. Jeff was telling me before the meeting that some groups were branding your group a cult and being accused of paying speakers to come in, and where's mine? I think that any meeting where I go and I talk about Alcoholics Anonymous and taking a lot of action in Alcoholics Anonymous, that might not sit well if someone's not taking action. I know that when I wasn't taking action in Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard a speaker that was taking a lot of action and they were real happy, I wanted them to suffer. I really don't like happy people when I'm not happy. You know, sometimes, you know, I go to a meeting and carry a message from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, talk a little bit about my experience and going through the steps of the sponsor and sponsoring other people and encouraging the guys I sponsor to sponsor other people and sticking close to the traditions and doing what I say when I say I'm going to say it, when I say I'm going to, you know, whatever. What happens is sometimes I get the sort of welcome that you might reserve, you know, that might be reserved for the Grand Wizard of the KKK at Obama's inauguration. I'll tell you, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with all my heart. My life before Alcoholics Anonymous was hell. You know, I went from obsession to obsession trying to be okay. And I couldn't figure out why everybody else was doing so well, and I was crappy. You know, it wasn't all bad, but when I got to the end of an obsession, I felt that loneliness. You know, and I am probably the loneliest person on this planet. You know, with my untreated alcoholism, the depths of my spiritual malady and my separation from you guys and from God will cause me to engage in behavior that is atrocious. I am a disgusting excuse for a human being. I have no character. I have no sense of morale. I don't really give a damn about anybody, okay, when I feel that loneliness. My life before Alcoholics Anonymous was an endless series of auditions where I just wanted to be liked, and I'll do anything to be liked. I remember being a little kid and trying to figure out what the hell was going on with everybody. You know, and I think I was doing really, really well until I turned about five. And then my life crapped out. I don't know what was wrong. I mean, people started screwing with me. You know, I started getting really smart. I had some ideas about living. I had some conflict with my family at an early age. My mom wanted me to eat vegetables, and I wanted chocolate chip cookies. She wanted me to go to bed, and I wanted to stay up. She wanted me to wear a sailor suit, and I wanted to look cool. I had conflict everywhere I went. I was 5 years old, and I was stealing from the gum store. You know what I mean? I was stealing pieces of gum. I don't know what was wrong, but I was always convinced that if I acted a certain way or engaged in a certain sort of behavior, that you would like me or respect me enough where I wouldn't feel so goddamn alone. And I remember being in first grade, and the reason I talk about what it was like in first grade because that's exactly how it was when I got out of rehab. I felt like I was back in first grade. We moved from one school system to another, and I'm looking at these kids. I'm looking at their sneakers, and because that's how you tell how somebody's really doing. And I'm like, oh, my God, look at that. And this kid's got jeans on, and I want to fit in, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't know where to sit because everybody, when I walk into a social situation, it looks like they're best friends. And I've got to trick them to becoming my friend. And I remember like it was yesterday, and these kids were doing very well, and I didn't know what to do, so I just took a seat, and then I thought it was a wrong seat, and I should have sat over there, and I suffered. You know, it wasn't alcoholism, but I did have that restless, irritable, and discontent feeling that I should, you know, if I'm sitting over here, I should be over there. If I'm going out with her, I should go out with her. If I'm working here, I should work over there. And nothing was ever quite perfect. And I remember the teacher asked a question. My hand darts up because I want to impress everybody. And I answered the question, but I got it wrong. And now I'm embarrassed, I'm humiliated, and I can't believe I said what I said. And I don't know what to do. It's horrifying. I was born with the ability to interpret nuances from other people in a way that's almost like a superpower. You know, I can look at somebody, and it just takes me a second, and I can tell you he's a complete asshole. You know, I'm like, look at me, you know, I don't, and I can look at a girl and she smiles and I know I'm in love and she loves me and we're going to get married. I can pick up on these things and I'm looking around and they think I'm retarded maybe. Maybe they think I came to school on a short bus and maybe I should be in the special class and they're judging me. I know and I better redeem myself so my hand darts up and I got to, you know, answer another question, but I got that one wrong. Now I can't even turn my head because I don't want to make eye contact. You know, I can feel people looking at me. The anxiety, the tension in the air is horrifying. And it couldn't have gotten any worse, but I had to go to the bathroom. Now I'm trying to visualize what I'm going to say and what's going to happen, and I've got to sound everything out in my head, whether it's some sort of activity, whether it's a dialogue. If you say something, what would I say to what you said, and what would you say to what I said? And I've got like thousands of useless conversations, just waiting to pounce on somebody. And so I'm thinking, what am I going to say? Okay, I know what I'll say. I'll put my hand up, and oh wait, the whole class in unison is going to say, "Hey, retard, she's not asking a question. Put your hand down, you know, stupid, you know." No, I can't do that. I'm thinking, okay, that's not going to happen. So I'll put my hand up, and the teacher's going to say, "Oh, okay, the retarded kid. Why don't you answer this one?" And then you can go to the bathroom, and I'll get that one wrong, and my life is over, and it's crapping out. You know, first day in first grade in this new class, and my life is already a complete freaking disaster. And I don't know. I'm like, oh God. But thank God I've got good ideas. I've always had good ideas. My sponsor has never bought in, you know, into the idea that I've got a good one yet. But well, I've only been sober for 21 years, so I'll give him some time. I'm thinking, you know what I'll do? I'll just wet my pants. Something that's a good idea. So I'm sitting there going, and for the first few seconds, it wasn't a bad idea. I'm like, oh, thank God. Whew. I'm relaxed. It's a little warm. It's like, oh, not bad. And it wasn't a bad idea until I looked down. I was like, oh, my God, it's a lot more than I thought. Oh, shit. Oh, this is first period. Oh. And then my life is caving in. Now, that's what it's like when I'm sober. You know, I'm always thinking it's going to get better. It doesn't get any damn better, you know. It was like the next year, the teacher comes in, she comes in with a book, and she's got a big stack of these books and a little story book. I don't know what it was, Mary Had a Little Lamb. I don't know what the hell it was about, but she starts handing them out. She goes, class, good news. I got a special treat for you today. What we're going to do is we're going to read out loud, you know, everybody gets a paragraph out of this book, and we'll cancel our normal lesson, and we'll just kind of goof off, and we'll have a really good time. And everybody else seemed to buy into the idea, but for me, it was like a Broadway performance. Because I'm consumed what you think about me. I'm like, God, what are they going to think? I got to get this perfect. So I count the kids. I count the paragraph. I start rehearsing. Right? I'm thinking, okay, I got, I'm doing pretty good. It's going around. It's getting a little close. I'm doing okay. I'm fine. I can do it. I start getting a little panicky, but I can do it. I can do it. And all of a sudden, some kid, a few seats down, reads three paragraphs. Now, I don't know how you're supposed to respond, but apparently, aggravated assault isn't one of the ways. Okay? I'm convinced that she got up this morning, she set out to screw me. Okay? In fact, everybody's always screwing me. Why are they always ganging up? You know, I'll go someplace and I'll be really nice to you, and then I see you talking to somebody else. I know you're talking about me, and I think, what the hell is he saying? Right? And I notice when people say things to me sometimes, they say things, it's like, hey, Jim, how you doing? And I'm going, good, how you doing? The next day, they go, hey, Jim, how you doing? And I'm thinking, did you see the way he said that? You know? I interpret nuances. You know what I mean? I can see what you really mean. And so my life's crap now. And it's not, you know, it's going to come together next year. It doesn't come together. And it's going to come together next year. And I'm living like this year after year. And every once in a while, it's not bad. You know, I play football. I work out every day. I'm running. You know, I'm killing myself. And I sacked the quarterback in the big game. Right? And I remember, oh, I got him. You know, everyone's clapping. All right, all right. But you know what? They don't want to have, like, a freaking parade for me. Okay? You know what I mean? I mean, we would be okay if every day were my birthday and you guys all lined up and said, happy birthday, good to see you, Jim, here's your present. And we did that every single day. Okay, but nobody really wants to play along. I mean, you can't love me enough. With this spiritual malady that I suffer from, you can't possibly love me enough. And I don't know how to deal with it. You know, and those obsessions. And I developed the obsession, financial. And I'm going to make a lot of money. And I'm going to get the sports car. And when I get the sports car, and I'm cruising around, it feels good. And then finally, I park it in the driveway or park it in the garage. And I'm thinking, is that all there is? And it's not enough. And I don't care how hot she is. And I don't care what job I have. Okay? It's not enough. You know? And I'll tell you, I don't know how much is enough, but it's never enough. You know, and I've had careers. I've ran a brokerage firm in New York, and I ran an ad agency. And I've done, you know, I've been homeless. You know, I don't know what end of the scale is right. Okay, but between running a brokerage firm and like being homeless, it's not in between that level. Okay, what happened was my life was pretty much on the fast track to nowhere. Okay, until I was 16, and what happened when I was 16 is I discovered what alcohol could do for me. Okay, what happens for me as an alcoholic is totally unique. It's not common. It's very rare, in fact. In fact, it's only like 5% of the world's population that will ever experience what alcohol does for me. I mean, you could hook somebody up to a morphine pump, you know, fill them full of morphine for a few weeks, and they're going to become physically addicted. They're going to be addicted. That happens to everybody. But I'll tell you, I don't care how much alcohol you give to a non-alcoholic, they're not going to experience what I experience. And I'll tell you, if you haven't experienced it, man, you're missing it, man. I love to drink. I love to drink. Drinking does something for me that is freaking awesome. Okay, I'll tell you, none of you guys are scary when I'm drinking. And all you girls are tens. I'm like, oh. You know, it just opens up the world to live in. You know what I mean? I can marry anybody. You know, and I'm not all embarrassed about what you're thinking about me and what you're going to think about her. And you know what I mean? I'll tell you, before I started drinking, I already threw away my soul. You know, I remember I was maybe in 8th, 9th grade, and this kid says, you know, hey, what girl do you like? And he's telling me about the girl he likes, and she's pretty hot. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's good. You know, and he goes, who do you like? And I told him the girl I liked, and he laughed. And so I had, like, a different girl. And what I did is I threw away part of my soul. You know, and I've done that with careers. And I've done it with musical interests. I've done it with literature. I've done it with everything that I've ever really liked, where I felt that little buzz inside when I did it. It felt good. You know, and I was embarrassed to tell you what movies I liked. And I was embarrassed to tell you, you know that I wanted to, like, you know, play the harmonica or the piano or anything. I just was too afraid to be exposed. I didn't want to take a position on anything. I want everybody to like me. And I'll tell you, if you want everybody to like you, like I want everybody to like me, you will know no happiness, because I experience no happiness. I know, you know, unless I'm willing to take a position, okay, I'll never experience life, you know. And what happened at 16 years old, my first night drunk, you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic. See, my very first night drinking, I got drunk, and you could have diagnosed me. You know, it wasn't the, you know, drinking every day or drinking in the morning or drinking by myself that makes me an alcoholic. I want it to be that way because I want to keep drinking. You know, so believe me, I to avoid drinking every day, give me some drugs, you know, give me whatever. You know, I'll mix it up, okay, because I live with the delusion that someday, somehow, I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking. You know, and what happened was this kid Mark calls me up, and Mark's a bad kid. I like bad kids. You know what I mean? If you're a well-balanced, good kid, and you say, hey, Jimmy, I'm thinking, this guy wants to have sex with me. I don't know how to do. What am I going to hit him? I don't know what to do with this. I don't know how to. I'm not a normal guy. I don't know. I am ill-equipped to have a normal sort of relationship with anybody. And he calls me up and goes, Jimmy, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls. And I'm not. I'm not thinking about Budweiser. Some of the older kids are drinking and they're you know doing some stupid things. I don't want to do any of that stuff, right? But I'm thinking about girls. Oh, girls, I'm thinking, you know, I'm 16, I've been trying to get married since I'm 5. And I remember this girl, Amy, sat next to me in homeroom. Now, Amy, this girl's delicious. You know what I mean? I would look over at Amy, and I'd sound out in my head what I'm going to say and what she's going to say, and, you know, just working out the details, and it's 2 years later, and I still haven't made a move. Because I'm terrified. I am so terrified of being judged. Of being rejected, I don't know what to do. I am scared to be real with anybody, you know. So I'm thinking, oh, I saw Mark talk to her. She's going to be there. All right, yeah. And they're going to be drinking, and oh, this is good. It's coming together, you know. And I'm thinking, what other girls are going to be there? I'm thinking this girl, Lisa. Now Lisa, oh my God, she was one of my sister's friends, you know. And it didn't go so well with her. You know what happened was she came over to my parents' house and sitting on the couch next to my sister watching TV. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, she said hi, so she wants me, you know. So I sat down next to her, and I'm like stalking her on the couch. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, can I get you anything? Can you get some chips? You want some soda? Do you want you know, and she's like, you know, and comes back through my sister that Lisa just wants to be friends. Oh my God, that's horrible. You know, when you're like a guy, you know what I mean? You don't want to be friends with girls. You know? And I'm thinking this girl, Karen. Karen might be there. And Karen's like one of these girls. She was nice to everybody. So she'd say, hey, how you doing? And, you know, she could be talking to the guy behind me. And I'm thinking, it's me, you know? And she smiled at me once. So I snuck in the classroom during lunch break, and I got her phone number off her book bag. Right, and so I call her, right, and I work out for like a week or two what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it and just pose everything perfectly, right, because she's a really nice girl. And so I get her on the phone. I go, hey, how you doing? She goes, who's that? And I'm like, oh, it's Jimmy Bach. How you doing? She goes, and I'm like, oh shit, that wasn't in my script, you know. And so I just went ahead with what I was going to say, you know what I mean? I just said it because it was saved up and I'm ready and it's coming out, you know. And she, you know, there's a little pause, you know, this is, I'm getting ready because I know she's going to say, you know, I feel the same way about you, I've been waiting for you to call, I we're going to get together, and I hear a little pause, and what she says is, you're queer. And I'm like, no, no, you know, I'm like, oh. It was like I was going over a cliff. No! It was like, and it just came out, and I was like horrified, and I was so embarrassed, and I didn't want to go to school anymore. You know, and how am I going to face anybody? I hope I never see her again. You know, I hope she dies. You know? So what happened was, this kid Mark, he calls me up, he goes, Jimmy, I got some Budweiser's. You know, case of Budweiser. I'm like, okay, come get me. You know, he could have said anything. He could have said, oh, I got some girls and some Molotov cocktails. Okay, yeah, come, get me. You know, I got some girls and a chainsaw. Okay, come on. I don't really care. I'm going to go along, okay, because I am so desperately alone. And so he shows up, and I'm fantasizing about these girls. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be it. This is it, you know. So car pulls in my driveway. I go running down the front, you know, and I get to the car, and some girl hops out. And I take one look at her, and I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. I'm thinking, where the hell is Amy? Right? I take a look at this girl. I'm like, oh, no. And she goes, well, hop in the middle. And I'm like, what? I look over in the back seat. It's her ugly sister. Right? I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting in this car, and you know, I'm playing football, but I'm not as big as this girl, and she's, I'm okay, I'll get in, you know. So I hop in the middle, right? We're driving, right? It's August, it's hot as hell, you know what I mean? There's no air conditioner. I look at me, my arm, she's like sweating on me, you know. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. This, you know, why don't you just hit a tree? I'll go through the windshield and die, and that would be better than this. You know, and mostly I'm just concerned that somebody's going to see me. You know what I mean? Somebody's going to see me. Believe me, I am so alone. If no one knows, I'll go with anyone because I am desperate. I am so seriously broken and so seriously alone on this planet that the loneliness is killing me. You know, and I you know, I'm driving, and I look at this girl, and she's got pretty eyes. I'm thinking, if I could just keep it to the eyes, you know, I'll let my hands move around, but I'll just keep her, you know, I'm just going to stare in her eyes, you know. So I try to talk to this girl, and I crap out. I can't even talk to a girl that I find repulsive. I'm like, what's wrong? I am so pathetic. Why can't I do this? Why? I am broken. You know, and it's like, shit, I can't do this, you know, and someone, you know, marketing said, you know, hey, do you want a Budweiser? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Everyone else is drinking. So I crack it open. I sip it a little bit. It tastes like skunk. I'm like, this is gross. He said, well, it's been in the bushes for a few days. Oh, but nobody else seems to notice. So I'm just drinking along with everybody else. Finally, I finish a can. I crush it up. I throw it on the floor. And someone says, oh, you want another one? And I'm thinking, I should have just kept the can because I don't drink this crap again, you know? Now, see, that night you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic. Because I don't know if it's the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth beer, but I'm drinking. All of a sudden, I look over, and this girl lost 15 pounds. I'm like, whoa. Right? And all of a sudden, I said something. And what was different was that it wasn't like I was begging her to be in my life. It wasn't like I was looking into her eyes, and they were totally judgmental. You know what I mean? When I look into people's eyes, I just feel rejection. I feel like condemnation. I feel like you just hate me. Like that you could see right through me, that you know how pathetic and broken I am, and I'm afraid to make a move. But I look in her eyes, and she was like, she wanted me. It was clear, you know. It's like she had that like hungry look where it was like, oh, I want you. You know, we all want you. Everybody wants you. Please pick me. You know, and I said something, and she laughed. She said something, and I laughed. Next thing you know, we're having a conversation. Now that's a home run for a guy like me. A guy can't talk to girls. I'm having a conversation. What alcohol did for me was it opened the doors to living and completely changed my life. It gave my life meaning. And I chased that, and I love that. I'll tell you. It was fantastic. And what happened was that I have a reaction to alcohol that only an alcoholic will ever experience. Not only does it change my perception of reality, but it stimulates that phenomenon of craving, which only an alcoholic apparently will ever experience. Because what happens is when I have a drink, or I have a couple drinks, it opens Pandora's box. And I have no idea what's going to happen. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I have no idea, you know. And that night, it was sort of mixed, you know, because I'm drinking. Next thing you know, we're making out. I'm thinking, whoa, baby, the Budweiser, the king of beers. This is just freaking awesome. This is great, right? But what happens is I keep drinking, right? And I keep drinking because I take a drink and the drink takes a drink. And next thing you know, I'm kissing her sister. Now she's upset, okay? But I'm drinking. I can do things. I can say things. Drinking plugs me into this power that allows me to perform, to say, to do what I cannot do sober. Because she's all upset because I'm kissing her sister. And I'm like, what? You don't like your sister? It's good enough for you. It's not good enough for her. You don't want to share. There's enough to go around. You know? Right? And what happens is I hit my first bottom. Right. The next thing that happens, I hit my first bottom. Now, bottoms don't get me sober. Now, I've never seen a real alcoholic where you can't get used to it. Right? I'm laying face down in the gravel parking lot. I got cinders on my tongue, rocks in my face, rocks in my chest, and one of these girls is stepping on my back. Apparently, I said something. I mean, it's okay for Jenny Craig, but it's not okay for me to give a little advice. She's all upset, but I'll tell you, laying in gravel parking lot is a small price for me to pay to join the human race, to be able to function, you know. And if it's just a matter of laying in parking lots, fine, who cares? Fast forward through my drinking, next thing you know, I'm in the back of this police car, I'm handcuffed, I'm devastated. I'm humiliated. I'm embarrassed. I cannot believe my life just crapped out. What happened here? I never knew anybody who'd been in a police car. Holy crap, what am I going to do now? But I'll tell you, the second time you get arrested, it's so much easier. It is so much easier. You know, give it 5-6 times, you're like, ha, this is a misdemeanor. Fast forward through my drinking, next thing you know, I'm getting evicted. Evicted. I don't know anyone who got evicted. What do you do now? You got like furniture and clothes and lamps and oh my God, it's embarrassing. What the hell? Oh, I'll tell you. Second, third, fourth time you get evicted, the furniture's gone. Okay? I mean, it's just me and a couple hefty bags. Right? You know, fast forward a little bit further and it's like, well, wait a second. You don't need an accountant. You don't even have to be really good in math. It's like first month's rent, month and a half security. That's 2.5 months. It took them 5 months to throw me out. I doubled my money by not paying the rent. Brilliant. Ah. The furniture. I mean, if you're not done drinking and you come up and you get the new place and you're finally, you know, ready and you're thinking about getting the furniture but you know you're going to get evicted, have a couple drinks. That's what I did. I had a couple drinks. I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to... Stole all the neighbor's lawn furniture. Right? Problem solved. Right? Fast forward through my drinking. One bad night. You know, I had a big job to do the next day. I was doing roofing and some construction stuff. I had to oil this guy's roof, and I got this station wagon that's souped up. That it's not licensed. You know, it's not registered. It's not insured. Some guy owed me money for some South American agricultural products, and so I took his car. Right, and I'm doing like 95 miles an hour, and apparently the power steering had an issue. Okay, because they took out 50 foot of guardrail, a telephone pole, and two of my buddies ended up in surgery. Because when I drink, I don't care about you. And I don't care about me. I'm drinking, and that's all I care about. I lose the ability to control my drinking or anything that happens when I'm drinking. You know? And I'll tell you, that wasn't the last accident I've been in. I've been in a lot of car wrecks. But they don't get me sober. Fast forward through my drinking. You know, just a couple drinks, and then a couple more drinks, and a couple more drinks, and next thing you know, I'm in New York doing an armed robbery. And it seemed like a really good idea at the time. Everything seems like a really good idea. Give me a few drinks. Give me a bottle of Stolas. I get enough booze in me. Anything, it seems like a really good idea. You know, fast forward through my drinking. I'm drinking one afternoon, right? And I'm just drinking Budweiser. Now, Budweiser, when I'm drinking, don't confuse that with drinking. Okay? I mean, how the hell are you supposed to get out of bed? Right? It's funny, this guy comes to my home group a while back, and he shares at the podium. He's like, well, I heard your stories. This guy's drinking Jack Daniels and vodka, and this guy's doing heroin and cocaine. You know, they should have a special program for people who just drink beer. And I yelled out, they do, Al-Anon. I tried to get the guy to come back and speak. He didn't want to come back. So anyway, we're just drinking beer in the afternoon, right? But what happens is my body doesn't care what kind of alcohol you put in it. Because it stimulates that phenomenon of craving. Now, it could be cooking wine, it could be Listerine, it could be vanilla extract. It doesn't freaking matter. Because I was drinking beer that afternoon, next thing you know, someone pulled out a bottle of Jack Daniels. I love Jack Daniels. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, like you could chew it. You know, it's like a full meal. It's like, I'm chugging Jack Daniels, right? And I'm driving because when I drink, I drive. Okay, I'm not screwing this whole mothers against drunk drive. Who cares about that crap? That wasn't even going on then, right? But I'm drinking. I'm looking for the keys, okay? Because I'm not going to sit around with you guys. You know, I'm going to go out and have some fun. I want an adventure, right? So we're driving down Route 10 in Denville, New Jersey, and some guy's hitchhiking, and we decide to pick him up, and then we decide to keep him. You know, and it seemed like a really good idea at the time. You know. And fast forward through my drinking, everybody has a problem with my drinking. Everybody. Nobody wants to give it the benefit of the doubt. Okay, I'm not the guy who's got the problem with my drinking. Everybody else has a problem with my drinking. And they all want to tell me when I have a hangover. You know, it's like, first of all, it's like my family, they start becoming very narrow-minded. I had my sister, and we drank together. You know, we did drugs together. We were partying all the time, but she gets really judgmental, you know, and we're sitting at dinner one night, and, she, you know, she's, you know, the conversation's fine until my name comes up. I mean, oh, you know what Jimmy did? I'm like, what did I do? You know, I'm like, oh, gee, what did I do? And she goes, well, last night. And I'm like, last night? I don't even remember last night. She goes, well, yeah, I came in, and Jimmy was peeing in the dishwasher. I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm starting to deny it. Then I'm thinking, well, the bathroom's all the way on the other side of the house. I'm like, well, come on, it's all connected, you know what I mean? Leave me alone, you know, just freaking leave me alone, you know? And then the police in my town, they have a problem with everything I do, you know what I mean? I cannot drive anywhere. You know, one day I'm pulling out of my driveway, before I get the front of the car out, they pull me over. Right? I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't do anything. Wait till I do something, you know? He's like, okay, get out of the car. I'm like, leave me alone. I'm like closing the window on the guy, and just finally I get out, you know, just to make him happy, you know. He's like, up against the car. He's like, throws me over the hood, and he's sticking something in my back. I'm like, oh shit, what is this guy doing? And he goes, you know, Mr. Bach, the plate on the front doesn't match the one on the back. I'm like, so? What? Who cares? Come on. It's not hurting anybody. You know, and just harassment everywhere I go. You know, my boss, he's all pissed off at me. I'm working on Wall Street at this time. Not because I know anything about finances, but I'm a liar. You know what I mean? I'm a liar, and I'm a scam artist, and I convince people to give me money, however, you know what I mean? That's what I, you know, I've been doing that since I could talk. You know, and it, really manipulative, and so they give me a job, you know, and next thing you know, I have this trading account, and I'm making money on Wall Street, but, you know, I don't know exactly what happens, but my coke dealer's got like $55,000 of my boss's money. And my boss is pissed off, right? He is really, really pissed off. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, just leave me alone. Come on, we'll work it out. Come on. You know, next thing you know, I end up in Brooklyn, you know, talking to some priest about my alcohol problem. And I'm like, what do you want to know? You know, and I'm talking to this guy, and he's like, well, why are you here? I'm like, well, my boss lost a lot of money. It was October, you know, 1987, the market crashed, and, you know, he's all upset because he lost all his money. He's trying to pin it on me, and I like to party, but everybody likes to party. You know, we're from Wall Street, and, you know, it's like the 80s, you know. And he's like, well, why don't you tell me about your drinking? I'm thinking, what do you mean by tell you about my drinking? What does that mean exactly? He said, well, how much you drink? I'm thinking, well, it's kind of like a loaded question, how much you drink. I mean, lately I've been drinking a lot, but there are periods of time where I didn't drink a lot, and I don't think I should be penalized now. I mean, if you really want to get an accurate assessment of my drinking, we should average out. You know, average out. Okay, I know a thing or two about statistics, right? So, you know, I mean, because there's some days where I can get drunk three times. You know, you wake up, you start drinking, you pass out, you puke, you shit your pants, and you start drinking again, right? And I can do that two or three times in a day. So the guy, I'm thinking, okay, how many times? Okay. Five times a week? That's not excessive. Okay, fine, I get drunk five times a week. No big deal. I'm not giving up anything on that. He goes, well, what about other, you know, drugs? And I'm like, what do you say to that? You know, once a week. That's not bad, you know. Because every time I'm drinking, you know, I'm in Harlem, you know, I'm in Alphabet City, I'm someplace getting something to keep this going. Because I don't want to drink just for today. I want to drink throughout the night and the weekend. You know, I want to keep it going for as long as possible because I love to drink. You know, and he goes, okay, once a week, what about drunk driving? Do you ever drunk drive? I'm like, well, you know, I don't have a license and I don't have a car. I'm thinking, but I, you know, believe me, when I drink, I'm looking for your keys, okay? So I tell him once a month. You know, it's like, that's not bad. How can he be upset about drunk driving once a month? Right? Yeah, he's like, oh, okay, you know, okay, will you ever get in a car accident? Well, yeah, well, I've been in about 12 total cars, you know, but I've been driving for a while, you know, I've been driving whatever, you know, some bad luck. I wasn't driving all those accidents, but I've been in some cars. You know, he's looking at me, you know, sort of weird looks and becoming somewhat judgmental. And when I went in there, the guy seemed very well balanced. He seemed like a very clean-cut guy. He was a priest, and he had like a very nice suit on, articulate, intelligent guy. And I'm thinking, this is a really nice guy, and he's really soft-spoken. And I'm thinking, okay, I can talk to him, and I feel comfortable, and I'm sharing. And he goes, well, I have some bad news for you. Bad news? I didn't tell him anything. What the hell is he going to... I go, what? He goes, you're not going to like it. I go, what? He said, you're an alcoholic, and you can never safely drink. I'm like, what? And I look at him, and he's got like a space between his teeth. And I look at his suit. It's polyester. And I'm thinking, this is a priest. He's probably one of those pedophiles. What the hell? This guy knows nothing about nothing. How could he judge me? And I'm getting pissed now, right? And I don't care. I'll hit a priest. I don't freaking care. Doesn't matter to me. I'm like, you know, you son of a bitch, you know. And I took the subway all the way to Brooklyn, and you're going to give me crap that I'm coming to see you, right? And I'm like, fuming, and the guy says, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's trying to calm me down, you know. He's like, oh, pal. I'm like, what? He said, well, why don't we talk about what you want to do with your life? Yeah, okay. He said, well, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, I want to have fun. Because that was it. I just want to have fun. That's it. That's the meaning of my life. Fun. He said, well, do you ever think of having a family? I said, yeah, I wouldn't mind having some kids and a good wife and settle down a little bit. And he goes, oh, that's very nice. He said, could you imagine that one day you're driving with your kids in the car and you had a couple drinks and you end up getting a car accident and your kids get killed? And I had this moment of clarity. I was like, that can happen. And I saw the truth about my drinking. I was like, holy shit, I'm an alcoholic. And I told the guy, I'm an alcoholic. Can you believe I'm an alcoholic? He goes, yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Right? And I said, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate what you've done for me. Because I've been going to AA meetings. Okay? And I talked to some people in AA, but I couldn't see myself as an alcoholic. Right? And I was like, this is unbelievable. Right? And my friend Billy, you know, he went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my friend Steve, he went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those guys got sober, but those guys, they were bad news. Okay, those guys were bad news. You know, I was involved in a couple business endeavors with my friend Steve, and, you know, one of them involved, you know, those South American agricultural products, one involved me dyeing my hair different colors, there's so many different identities, another one involved a consent decree for mail fraud, and we were just involved in some activities, and he had this house in over by Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and there was an AR-15 under his bed, there was an M1 under mine, there was a 45 in a couch, a 38 automatic above the stove, a 38 in the bathroom in case we had company. And what happened was this guy ends up having a bad night, apparently, and he ends up going to detox. He starts coming out, you know, he comes out, he starts talking about God and Jesus and people saving people, and I'm just like, oh my God, what happened to him, right? And he gave me $20 to go to an AA meeting, so I went to an AA meeting, right? And I was like, oh, it's very nice, and it's good for you because you're really damaged. You really have some serious problems about it, right? Then my friend Billy, like a year or two later, he goes to AA, and now Billy was a great guy to hang out with, you know what I mean? Because he always had a gun, right? And he was like, I'm one of those, like, I guess you might call him a pussy. Right, I go to a bar and I find a really big guy and I spit on him and I go, Billy, this guy's screwing with me, right? And then Billy's fighting like all these guys all the time and I'm like sitting hanging out drinking, you know, hitting on the guy's girlfriend, you know what I mean? And what happened was one night Billy, he was in the motel and he threw the television through the window and apparently a prostitute right after that. And he ends up in this detox, and he goes to AA, and he comes out, he's talking about God, and how is, you know what I mean, and that whole thing, and I'm like, oh my God, and he's taking me to AA meetings. So I had some exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't an alcoholic. But at this point, this guy told me I'm an alcoholic, and I bought the idea, and I had this moment of clarity, and I was like, okay, yeah. So I go back to work, and I tell my boss, hey, I'm an alcoholic. And he had like this sigh of relief, oh my God, thank God. And I tell my other boss, and he goes, yeah, no shit, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is great. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't realize it. Because I was drinking a lot. I was surprised I wasn't an alcoholic by the way I drank. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, my God. This is... I mean, because I drink a quart of vodka, and not being an alcoholic, is I was hoping it wouldn't kick in. You know what I mean? And so what happens is that one thing goes, leads to another. I end up in a rehab, and this guy comes in from AA, and he was sober about 3 years, right? 3 years seemed like an eternity. And I'm looking at him like, why the hell would you want to stay sober that long? You're getting carried away with this whole AA thing, you know what I mean? I could see to keep it together like for a month or two to get the heat off, but to stop like for 3 years is ridiculous. Now, because my view of Alcoholics Anonymous was not good, okay, I thought I was giving up something. You know what I'm saying? I thought that, coming to AA was sort of like taking your dog to get neutered, okay? It's like, okay, the fun's over now, Fido. Okay, I hope you had a good run, because, welcome to hell. This is it. You could just say goodbye to any good times, And that's what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was about. In retrospect, believe me, if I can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than I can drinking, I'm drinking. If I can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than I can from, doing heroin, I'll do heroin. I will do anything, okay, to get a buzz. I love buzz. I love the buzz. I love it. I'm not talking like I love to get wasted, okay? And if you can't give me something that's better here, I'm not playing, And what happened was I got out of, I said a prayer for the first time that I could ever remember on my knees in that rehab, And I don't know if anything magical happened, but I got out and I went to AA and I went to this meeting and I put my hand up because they told me to put it up in rehab and ask for rides. Because I didn't have a license, and they thought it was a bad idea to steal cars and drive without a license. Right? And so I asked for rides, and I put my hand down. Nobody came running up. Nobody gave me a meeting book. Nobody tried to do any, And I was like, oh, well, whatever. I did what I told, I was told. And I get out. I'm, walking across the parking lot, and some guy calls out, hey, I can give you rides. I was like, oh, yeah? And so we start walking toward each other, and we're talking a little bit, and he said, well, where do you live? And I told him I was living at my parents' house, which is a couple blocks from where he lived. He said, oh, look at that. God's will. I'm like, whatever, whatever. These guys can believe what they want to believe. I don't really care, And he said, you need a ride home? And I said, sure, that'd be great. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Right? Because he says, well, this car over here, we got just a couple guys, and what we're going to do is stop at the diner on the way home. I'm like, I'm not really good with this social sort of thing. I don't like people. I don't like to talk to people. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to. And so I put my hand into my empty pocket and I said, well. And he did what every good member of Alcoholics Anonymous would do. He said, no, no, no. You're new. You're supposed to be broke. My treat. And I looked at him and then he said, if you weren't broke, we'd be suspicious. I started laughing, and he started laughing, and I went over, I got in the car, and I sat down with these guys, and they start telling drinking stories. I'm like, shh, keep it down, because we don't need to let everybody know about what the hell we're doing, because my whole life's a secret. I don't even want to let you know what town I live in, okay? That is way too personal, These guys start—they're telling their stories, and I'm thinking, "Oh my God, they're going to come. They're going to these guys have been around AA. They probably passed up on their statute of limitations thing, but they're going to drag me out in handcuffs, And I'm like, "Oh my God!" But by the end of the evening, I'm laughing. I'm laughing with these guys, and I couldn't believe it. They dropped me off. It was like 10 o'clock at night, and I didn't pick up a drink, and I didn't want to pick up a drink, and I was starting to feel something in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm getting out of the car, and the guy says, "I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7." And I'm thinking, how do you know I didn't have plans? And I was too dumb to know any better. I said, okay. And he dragged me to meetings every single day. Good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was, after a little while in AA, I'm like feeling a little weird, feeling a little restless. As some new guy gets out of rehab, and everybody's paying attention to him now. I'm not the celebrity. I used to be the celebrity. I was like, oh, Jim, you're back again. How you count days? What, you have 28 days. That's good, Jim. It's so good that you're doing something so early in your life. You don't have to suffer like we suffered. Oh, it's just wonderful what you're doing. And all of a sudden, some guy gets out of detox or rehab, and they're paying attention to him. And I'm giving him like a little hex, like, you're gonna get drunk, son of a bitch. Took my spotlight from me, right? And then I'm sitting with guys at meetings, and we're best friends. You know what I mean? Best friends. We're sitting together, all best friends, and all of a sudden he's sitting next to this guy over here. I'm like, what happened? I thought we were, and they're whispering, and they're talking. I'm thinking they're talking about me. I'm like, what? And I have my hand up, and they don't call on me. Right? I'm thinking they're screwing me, right? And my mom, like, you get home, and no longer they treat me really nice. It's like my mom, like, sort of hints around, you know, maybe you want to go to work. And, you know, one day she comes in with the shopping bag. She goes, oh, here, you might want to look in this, you know, it's like a brown shop. And I'm like, what the, I open it up, it's like 3 years of unopened mail. I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is this? She's like, oh, it's just like, you know, it's like a Visa, you know, it's like, oh, and he's like, I owe what? And then I open it next month, it's more, and then all of a sudden, a year later, they're begging for their money. It's like, oh, we'll settle with you. And I'm thinking, I got them where I want them, you know. And then I open this other, this envelope, there's like warrants from towns I've never been to. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is this? Oh shit, what's going on? And I'm getting crazy. And I go to a meeting and it doesn't shut my head. And I need something more. And what I've learned is that going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and not working the steps is like going to a bar and not drinking. It's only good for a little while. So I'm restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontent, and I'm crazy. And I'm judgmental, and I hate you, and I'm starting. My normal sense of anxiety that I carry around with untreated alcoholism is coupled by all the things that I've done drinking, and all the things that I've done in an attempt to get a drink. Okay, and the guilt, and the shame, and the remorse, and oh my God, my mind is like yelling at me. This guy drops me off one night, and the meeting didn't work, and I'm going crazy. And I look at the clock, and I'm like, oh, I can't do this. I can't. I'm sitting at the kitchen table. I'm just staying glued to the table because I don't want to get up because I'm afraid I'm going to go over to the liquor cabinet, or I'm going to steal my mother's pocketbook, or I'm going to steal a car. I'm going to go get something. I'm going to stop the noise. The next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock, and I've been sitting there for an hour thinking. And that goes on hour after hour until about 1 o'clock, and I'm thinking, I got to get to the bar before last call. I got to 2 o'clock. I got to do something. And what happened was this guy that befriended me in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know why I called him, but something happened. I just picked up the phone, and I called him. And I'll tell you, if you get a new guy calling you at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he says something along the lines as, you know, hey, how you doing? What he's saying is that I'm dying, I need help now, can you help me? And he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because what he said was, why don't you come by? I said, okay, I'll be right over. So I go out to the garage, I steal my little sister's purple Schwinn with the basket and the bell, and I'm zipping over there, right? I get the door, and he welcomes me in, he makes me a sandwich, I sit down, and I feel comfortable just because this guy is there. Somebody else is there, somebody stronger than me emotionally. Right? And I'm like, oh my God. And he was different than other people that tried to help me. So I've been going to therapists and psychiatrists and psychologists, and everybody's got a diagnosis for Jimmy. You know what I mean? It's like, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? It's like, and we always play this game. I sit across the table and I try to tell the truth, but they get really judgmental, and the end of my story changes. And I can't tell the truth because my life has become an endless series of auditions, and I don't care who you are. I don't care what you are. I cannot tell the truth because I'm terrified of being judged. I'd rather die than be judged. You know, and this guy did something radically different. He looked into my eyes and he told me his story. He said, oh, must be tough getting sober working in New York. And I'm like, oh my God, you have no idea. He goes, yes, I do. I got sober in New York. I said, what? He goes, oh, one night I'm out drinking with this other guy. We're in the back of this cab and another cab comes around the corner, smashes in the cab. And I go, yeah, so? And he says, well, the driver gets out, starts talking to the other driver. He said, I got tired of waiting, jumped up front and took the cab. I look at this guy. Now, this guy didn't look like he stole cars. I mean, I look like I stole cars, but he didn't look like, he was an attorney. You know, he was a director of tax audits for a Fortune 100 company. This guy is a big shot. I'm like, he's stealing cabs. This guy, he's cool. I can hang with him. Okay? So, and he keeps going. He goes, next thing you know, I'm in the tombs. I'm thinking, how the hell does he know about the tombs? Yeah, and he goes, they had me shackled. I'm thinking, oh my God, he's been shackled. This guy is cool. He said, well, I looked side to side, and they had me shackled. There was a woman on each side. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. They separate the men and the women in tombs. He said, well, I looked down, they had really big hands. I looked up, and they had Adam's apples. I was like, whoa. And I'll tell you, I had secrets. I'm taking my grave. But all of a sudden, I start telling a story. I said, that's nothing. One night, I'm down in Washington Square Park. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around the park with a hatchet. He looks at me. Now, if he was a good psychiatrist, psychologist, somebody who really knew what the hell they were doing, he might have said something along the lines of, Jimmy, why don't you explain the series of events that led up to the chase? Now, we didn't need to go there. Right? Okay? I mean, I wanted my money back. He looks at me, he laughs, he tells me a story. He tells me another story. I'm like, oh my God. He tells me the sexual escapade that might have scared Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's a freak. I gotta get the hell out of here. This son of a bitch is gonna eat me. And all of a sudden, he's looking at me, freaking out. He starts laughing. I got caught up in his laughter. Now I'm laughing. Now I think it's cool, right? So I'm thinking, well, I could tell him just about anything. Now he's not going to judge me. I'll just report him. You know what I mean? So I tell him another story, right? He laughs. He tells me another story. Now, that went back and forth for about an hour and a half. And at the end of an hour and a half, this guy knew more about me than 20 years of therapists combined. Now, that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a pride problem. I want you to think I'm something I'm not. I always want you to think that I'm better or worse than I am. Okay, the problem is pride. And I can't be real unless you're real with me. I mean, you give me a little baby, right, that has no armor, no defense, and I can be real. And I can go goo goo ga ga, you know, I can make faces, I can giggle, I can blow spit bubbles. It doesn't matter. I feel like there's like a connection. There's some God there. But I'll tell you, in Alcoholics Anonymous, what this guy did by telling me his story, he laid down his armor and allowed me to be real for the first time that I could ever remember. And I walked out of that guy's apartment, a free man. I was different. And I'm smiling. And I couldn't believe I was smiling. He said, you know, you did more for me than I'm doing for you. I'm like, what? In retrospect, that guy was going through a brittle, just brutal, disgusting, horrible divorce. Okay? But for one night, he didn't have to think about himself. He got to unplug and think about somebody else and maybe refocus. Okay? And I'll tell you, sponsorship is probably a key for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. One drunk talking to another drunk, convincing me to take some action I don't quite understand. You know, and I didn't really understand the true essence of what that guy was going to share with me that night. But a number of years later, okay, I had some ups and downs in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had some good times. I've had some bad times. And it's all revolving around how much action I'm willing to take in Alcoholics Anonymous. The recovery is not in my head. It's not in my understanding. It's in my feet. It'll always be in my feet. It's never an understanding program. It's always an action program. I got to take the action to change my perception. But a number of years later, I'm running this ad agency, and my life's crapping out, and I did ups and downs in recovery. I sponsored myself for a number of years. I got indicted as a result of that. I encourage that, really. If you haven't tried that and you really have some ideas, just try it. Just go for it. Get full, you know. Because I'm facing 5 to 15, and I got a new sponsor and went through the steps, and I started sponsoring a lot of guys, and I'm running this ad agency, and one thing leads to another. I get a call one day. And it's the psych unit at this hospital that I'm bringing meetings into. And they said, we got this guy. We don't know what to do with him. I mean, he is hopeless. Now, think about hopeless. Okay, depression is way up here. Hopeless is way down by the ground. It doesn't get any worse than hopeless. I mean, believe me, they got a lot of antidepressants. Okay, they don't have anti-hopeless pills yet. I'm sure they're working on it in the laboratory somewhere. Okay? But this Alcoholics Anonymous works for hopeless. You know? And then they said, we don't know what to do with him. We gave him shock treatment. We tried the group thing. We tried, you know, medication. We tried everything. This guy is catatonic. He tried to kill himself. Serious effort. And I said, they said, can you come over now? And I'm like, thinking in my head, I can't because I have a business. I have a conference call. I lost $30,000 on this deal. I cannot deal with this now. No. And what comes out of my mouth is, okay, I'll be right over. And I go over there and I look at this guy and I'm like, oh my God. He had these crusty sweatpants. It looked like, you know, they were like wet and dry and wet and dry, and he had like sores on his neck and his hair was all matted, and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with this? Right? And my sponsors always encouraged me just to show up, and God uses the willing. He doesn't use the qualified. He said, you're just a reflection, you know, just your reflection of God. Just show up. He'll show you what to do. And I get there, I'm looking at this guy, and I said a prayer, God, take over, because I'm out of my league here. I don't know what the hell to do here. And so I walk in, I look the guy in the eyes, and I said, my name's Jim, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Chances are if I get an opportunity to tell my story to somebody today, I might not pick up a drink. Do you think I could tell you my story? He looks up and he goes, okay. And I start telling my story, and I told him it's one little story, you know, that I had forgotten. It just came to me. It was like my connection with other human beings is that we're all uniquely qualified or composed to fit together magically to resonate something special. Maybe it's just a spark, but I looked in the sky and I remember the story, and I told him about living in my girlfriend's basement toward the end of my drinking, right? And I'm like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. And he's like, oh yeah? And I said, oh, I was living behind the furnace, and I disappear for a couple of days here and there, and you know, I had just totaled my girlfriend's car, and she's all pissed off at me, and I informed her, like, before the cops got there that I didn't have a license, she better sit in the driver's seat, and she's more pissed off, and she got a brand new car, and, you know, the insurance paid for a new car, and she didn't thank me, of course, you know. He's looking at me, he understands, you know. But she picks me up one day, and we're going to the beach, because, you know, I like girls that have a lot of money, you know what I mean? So she had a beach house, She's got light blue velour seats, and I got some white tennis shorts that were on someone's clothesline, and I'm like, I got weird pains, and I think I have a little bit of gas, and I'm telling the story, he's looking at me, and you know what happens, I ended up shitting my pants in the girl's car, right? And he looks at me, and all of a sudden, all I hear is, I'm like, whoa. He goes, I did that, and I look over his sweatpants, I'm thinking, yeah, it's probably this afternoon, you know? And I'm like, right? He starts telling me his story, and I start telling him my story, and that went on for a while. And I'll tell you, when I left there, he had a smile ear to ear, you know. And I thanked him. I said, you know, you're doing more for me than I'm doing for you. And I get back, and I have that conference call, and I'm thinking, God's going to take care of me. He loves me. I'm doing His work. He better sure should take care of this business deal for me. So what happens is, I call the guy, and I don't lose $30,000. I lost $60,000. And I don't lose money gracefully. Okay, I am not a nice guy. Okay, I will find out where you live. Okay, and I'll come after your family because I am a psychopath. Okay, I start laughing. This guy expects me to be a psychopath. I start laughing, and he goes, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Well, at least no one died." And what happened was that guy and his company gave me hundreds of thousands of dollars of business I didn't deserve because Alcoholics Anonymous plugs me into a power greater than myself. Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's awesome. If you don't have a better buzz than Alcoholics Anonymous than you do drinking, it's not Alcoholics Anonymous' fault. It's just like me looking at a recipe in a cookbook. If the cake tastes like crap, it's not the cookbook's fault. Thanks for letting me share.